Journalismus, der Frieden ermöglicht. Das ist Media for Peace, ein Podcast des Media Lab Bayern.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen. So cool, dass du mehr über Journalismus und das vor allem in Krisengebieten erfahren möchtest. Mein Name ist Sabrina Harper und ich habe das Vergnügen, diesen Podcast zu moderieren. Bei Media for Peace geht es um einen friedensfördernden Journalismus und parallel zu diesem Podcast läuft das gleichnamige Projekt. 11 Medienschaffende aus dem Libanon, Afghanistan, Deutschland und Südamerika versuchen während des Projekts, ein Produkt zu entwickeln, das einen friedensfördernden Journalismus vorantreibt. Ja, aber was bedeutet denn das konkret? Häufig kann man sich darunter nicht so richtig was vorstellen. Andersrum aber schon. Probieren wir es mal so. Wir kennen das, glaube ich, alle. Aufpeitschende Artikel, kontroverse Aussagen, eine Seite gegen die andere. So funktioniert das doch meistens in den Medien. Wie wäre es aber, wenn man statt die gegen uns eher sagen würde, es gibt viele Ansichten, lasst uns die doch mal vereinen. Klingt ganz anders, oder? Und dieses, lass uns die doch mal vereinen, das wäre friedensfördernd. Die 11 Leute aus dem Projekt, die nenne ich übrigens gern die Media for Peace Fellows und die suchen genau nach so etwas, nach dialogfördernden Formaten und Tools. Damit das gelingt, haben die Fellows in den letzten Wochen Kriterien untersucht, die in so ein friedensförderndes Format einfließen. Und zwei wichtige Aspekte dabei sind Transparenz und Datenlage. Warum die zwei Dinge so wichtig sind, das haben mir die Fellows Radgar und Ellie erklärt.
Media for Peace. Insights.
Hi Radgar. Hi Ellie. Welcome to the show. Today I want to talk with you about transparency in journalism, especially in conflict zones. But before we start, can you each introduce yourselves and tell us a bit about your backgrounds and experiences?
Sure. Hi Sabrina. Thanks for having us. My name is Radgar. I come from Czech Republic. But I have had the privilege of living and working in a couple of what you might call post-conflict countries, such as Bosnia and Herzegovina and Lebanon, one of our case country studies. And my professional background is, a bit complicated, which I think is a great fit for this program. So I am a public policy professional with background in international development, youth capacity building, innovation, and data analysis.
Hello, Sabrina. Thanks for having me today. So I'm Eli, coming from Lebanon. My professional background for the last 5 years, I was working with different businesses as software engineer and system architect, empowering them with technologies, building their solutions, and helping them transmitting into the digital era. I'm happy to be in this program, bringing my technological expertise to help journalists around the world.
I'm happy to have you with us too. What you both got in common is that you are fellows of the Media for Peace project. Over the last couple of weeks, you have been researching and evaluating various topics, one of which is transparency in journalism. So what have you discovered so far?
So I think transparency in journalism is definitely not a new topic. It sort of periodically reappears. What we have been looking at the most is how it influences the trust in media, which, of course, has also been an ever-appearing topic. And we've been looking at how different media outlets are dealing with these requests from audiences, which, for me personally, I think is taking a bit different flavor, one could say, compared to previous, because of the closeness that audiences got used to from social media with, you know, the world of influencers. You kind of build this personal relationship with those people and you feel like you are part of their lives. Whereas with media, there always has been felt this distance between the journalists and their audiences. And I think transparency is really kind of situating itself in that context.
Yeah. And for me also, dealing with transparency from a different perspective and working with a topic which is related to censorship, I was seeing that transparency is lacking today in the conflict zones with the journalists operating in a conflict zone like Lebanon or Afghanistan due to many factors. They are not being able to operate in a transparent way due to safety concerns, censorship, self-censorship, and all the related issues that is preventing the trust and making the reports not transparent as they should do.
Would you say this is the main cause for a lack of transparency at least?
At least, yes. In the conflict zones, there is many issues that is preventing the lack of transparency, the safety concerns for the journalists, their families, the surrounding, the data source that they take. Maybe they will not make a transparent report if they will be threatened. The media censorship, their employers are censoring them, especially, for example, in Lebanon, because if they will make a transparent report about a certain bank, the employer will stop it and censor it because this bank is bringing money and giving them a lot of income. With also other related things like the limited resources that the journalists have in conflict zone and the limited access due to the government rules and other stuff that is causing this lack of transparency.
I would also add, Eli, that what we have seen is that quite often part of transparency is how the media outlets are being financed. And that can be obviously a very sensitive topic. So especially in conflict, post-conflict countries, if you are saying that your funding is coming from, let's say, big philanthropic foundations in the USA, you may already be labeled as kind of an agent of those foundations and you are losing this.
I see. Funding is a big problem, but also the lack of trust. It is really hard to get them both together.
I think the problem of the lack of trust is so multifaceted, like we can't really tackle it in this podcast. But transparency is playing into that, and it's funding is one thing about it. The other thing is journalistic method, you know, having people, your audience, understand how you are doing journalism, why you are picking the topics you are picking, why you report on them the way you report on them. If I look at it from my data perspective, it's like, why do you decide to publish the data you pick up? Like, why do you opt for that source? Why do you present it that way? So it's a lot more about explaining what you are doing and how you are doing it, and also having this, in essence, vulnerability about saying, okay, our money is coming from whatever sources are available, which is, of course, very market specific.
Eli, as a back-end developer, what does transparency mean to you?
From a software engineering perspective, transparency means how we will treat the data, how we will work with it. Because as Radka mentioned, we have a lot of concerns regarding how the data is gathered, treated, and why they are gathering all this data, especially the media outlets and organizations, so which make a lot of questions. And today, to avoid kind of these concerns in from the software engineering perspective, we are moving to a new infrastructure called the Web3, the third generation of the web, and the blockchain, which is open. No one can control your data. Your data is owned by you, not by a single entity or by one man show who will own and manage your data, which will help building more transparent and data secure systems that will help in journalism and other domains.
Besides all of that, I think maybe it's also an attitude how to deliver stories. The way these stories are written or the way journalists present topics could be in a destructive kind of way. For example, if they're just mentioning bad things, or they can put it into a positive, respectful way. I mean, they can separate or they bring different kind of views altogether. That is what I mean when I'm talking about an attitude. That might be an important factor besides data and sources too.
I don't think it's necessary just in conflict zones. I think, in this fellowship, we have been looking at journalism through the prism a bit of peace journalism concept, which obviously has very specific reporting requirements, if I may put it that way. But we see the tendencies worldwide, right? There is a huge push towards solution journalism, constructive journalism. So we are looking at how to report on the stories in a way that make the audiences engaged in a, you could say, positive, constructive manner.
Yes, I think I agree with you. It's a general topic not only related to the conflict zones, because journalists play a very important role on how the story or the event is covered, and they have significant impact on the audience, especially in the conflict zones, because they wait for the journalist to send a report or to publish something to understand how things are going. So thinking in a solution-oriented way and bringing the positive aspects will help this audience maybe consuming the reports or looking at the next steps in a positive way and not always in a conflict-oriented way.
I'm really looking forward to what comes out at the end of the Media for Peace project. Thanks, Radka. Thanks, Ellie, for your time and for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Sabrina.
Thank you, Sabrina.
Transparenz schafft also Vertrauen, Daten und Quellenangaben stärken die Objektivität und ein wertschätzender Ton macht den Journalismus einfach gehaltvoller. Doch wie sieht das jetzt in der Praxis aus? Media for Peace fokussiert sich ja unter anderem zunächst auf die Post-Conflict-Zone Libanon. Dort habe ich vor einiger Zeit jemanden aus einem kleinen Medienunternehmen kennengelernt, das genau diese Grundprinzipien verfolgt. Es heißt Nackt Politics und dort arbeitet Anthony Barakat. Und ich wäre ja nicht die Sabrina, wenn ich nicht nachgefragt hätte.
Media for Peace. Ganz nah dran.
Hello, Anthony. It's so nice to have you on this podcast. Where are you right now?
Hello, Sabrina. Thank you for having me. I am talking to you right now from Beirut, from the Lebanese capital.
So you are working for Nackt Politics in Beirut. That's a so-called alternative media outlet. Could you please explain what's the difference between an alternative media outlet and a so-called traditional media outlet?
Yes, I am the co-founder of Naqd Media Outlet. It's based in Beirut and we cover news from all over the Middle East and the Arab region. Actually, alternative media outlets are typically smaller and more independent media outlets, and they are a bit not as well-funded as the traditional media outlet. So they often offer a different perspective on news and events with a focus on issues and stories that are often overlooked or maybe ignored by mainstream media. So this is what we do. And alternative media, they also have more grassroots approach. So they focus more on the people, on the causes, and they like work with a grassroots approach to journalism with a strong focus on citizen journalism, community involvement, and activism. So basically, alternative media outlets are media outlets that are independent. This is the most important thing to focus on. Traditional media outlets, on the other hand, are usually larger and more established with greater resources, mainly from, sorry, but this is the truth, political money. So this is something we don't have and we don't want to, luckily. And that's it. Maybe this is the basic difference between both type of media.
So just to get this clear, because in Germany it works a kind of different way. So a traditional media outlet is funded by political party or by some influencers, and that is why they are not as independent as an alternative media outlet, right?
Yes, so this is not the official case of the thing, but this is what's happening like in real world, in the last year in the Middle East.
So that's a kind of question of transparency. So is this transparent to the people that are consume media that there are some influences behind all of that? Or is it just they do consume media and they don't know who's just behind those media outlets? What is it like?
So in Lebanon, most of the people know that this media outlet, this traditional media outlet is owned by political parties, and we know this because it's a small country and everyone knows everyone. So it's very obvious for us that this is happening. But I mean, the supporters of these parties are very happy to watch news on a biased media platform. I mean, they like to hear what they want to hear. So this is convenient for them, even if they know that this is not the 100% truth. And even if, for example, for us as a media platform, I mean, we are objective, but we are not neutral. While independent, we are the owners of our own views and point of views. This is what makes us independent. But the other media platforms, the big names in the industry, they are here actually for political agenda. So, I mean, people know that. Some people like it and some people they just look like it, but this is why they refer to us and other alternative media platforms nowadays.
Okay, so how do you deal with the transparency when it comes to journalistic stories from your Nakt Politics media outlet?
Yes, thank you for asking. This is something very important in our opinion as an alternative media platform, because we try to do the things that the traditional media, they just don't do it. So we always indicate where our information comes from when possible, and we include links to the original sources. We also fact check our stories before publishing and provide evidence to support the claims. We also, if we make mistakes, I mean, everyone does mistakes, or an error in our reporting, we correct it, and we, with transparency, and we say this on our social media platforms. We disclose any potential conflict of interest that could impact our reporting. For example, if we are reporting on a company in which one of our staff members has a financial interest or whatsoever, we will disclose that information. This has never happened, but I mean, we have this in our policies. And the most important thing is we engage with the audience. So we welcome feedback and criticism from the readers, from our audience, and we make ourselves available to answer questions and address concerns. So, I mean, it's better for, it's not a one-side journalism. It's two sides. It's from our side and the readers and the people who will be interacting with us.
So you can call it like a dialogue or a polylogue with all the people that are consuming
media. Exactly. It's like we say, it takes two to tango. So this is the same thing here. It takes two to have a decent news outlet.
When I first met you, that was in Beirut on a conference, you told me that the name alternative media outlet is actually incorrect. Why is it?
Yes, exactly. So you remember
I remember clearly. That, yes.
Actually, yes. For us, I think alternative media, I mean, is like something that is not media. So we consider ourselves as new media platforms, but not alternative, because alternative, it means we are here to replace. We are not here to replace. We are here to do things differently. So this is totally different than replacing what's existing already. So this is why I prefer not to call it alternative media platform, but a new way of producing media and working in the media field as an independent media platform, and not as alternative, but as a new independent media platform. So this is, for us, I guess it's the best name, is like the best tag, you mean, to present ourselves. And I think this is something that most of media platforms, the new media platforms, share together. We consider ourselves as new, but not as alternative, because we are something different. We are not here like to replace or to change things.
Okay, there are several new independent media outlets. They are all have their challenges. For example, the question how they get funded or something. So from your point of view, what are the biggest challenges of facing working in a small news media outlet as you are?
Yes, of course. So they are big challenges, and bigger than any other sector that we might be working in. Funding is the most important thing. I mean, if you want to continue, you need to have the capacity, the financial capacity to do so. This is very important, and this is a big challenge for us and for other media platforms, new emerging media platforms, because independence comes with a price. You need to find creative ways to generate income. And this is what we are doing, actually. We created a small advertising agency called MadAd. It's a sister company for Nakt. It's an advertising agency because we have the resources on board to create content on social media for our platform. And we said, why not use our talents and people on board to create content for other platforms as well, as in our international organizations, local NGOs, and other stuff. So we handle social media for them. We create their content, and we ensure that their messages are very well seen and by other people, and the right message is received by the right target audience. So this is what we do. And we sell our services to be able to generate some of our income to continue with doing what we do at Nakt and at MadAd. So this is one way to ensure independence. The other way is, like, of course, applying to grants and having grants from international donors and international foundations to work on collaborations and projects. For example, we work on web shows with the German foundations, other foundations from all over the world and from Lebanon. It's like a co-production between both entities. So they provide the fund, we provide the production. So this is how we do things. But I mean, for the long run, we need like to dig deeper and find more sustainable solutions. But for the time being, this is what we are doing.
What do you think do small media outlets need to continue their work except the funding? Are there some structural things that you need, or is it really dangerous to work as a journalist and you need to be protected? Or what's important for you on the ground to continue your work?
What's more important here is the access to information. So we have lack to access to important information, although we have a law that was voted like 3 years ago that every media outlet has the right to access to any information and government information that they want. But the law is very tricky. So you need like to apply before and then to pay for what you want, and the amount that you need to pay are very huge. So they did this just to ensure that their media outlets are the only ones capable of paying. So this is very tricky. We try to find other ways. We try to ask our friends and our people in the government and other stuff, like, I mean, our connections. And we want to know what's happening, and they try to avoid this. So this is one challenge, access to information. Security is another challenge, of course. It's not as important as the first one yet, but I mean, security concerns are rising day after day. I mean, we used to be kind of a free country in the standards of what's free is in this region. I mean, the situation sadly is getting worse because of the economic crisis and other stuff. So people are trying to close these doors in front of people and in front of media outlets. So these are, I mean, and competition is a bit, is an important challenge as well, but this is normal and this is like the good challenge. Competition helps you, I mean, create better stuff and be more creative.
Okay, you said that it's really difficult to get to some information and then you have to call your personal contacts. So I guess it's also very hard to verify information if there's no official institution that gives you the information.
Yes, this is very true. What we try to do is we try to have as much evidence as possible. I mean, like signed papers or confidential agreements or whatsoever. It depends actually on the story. If the story is very important, even if we don't have all the information necessary, it needs to be up and running. So maybe it's true. So, and most of the time it's true. I mean, if you spend like a lot of time and working in this field, you know, like that if this story will have something in it as fishy or it's true. So, and people need to hear this, even if they don't let us have all the files and all the proof that we want. But I mean, sometimes we try and we succeed, and other times we don't. But we post the stuff. And maybe after other media platforms posted as well, and then the public opinion will start talking about it, and then we start receiving proof about this. So this is what we are doing.
Okay, so how many people are working at NACT Politics?
We are actually 5 people, full-timers in the office, but we have more than 20 volunteers from journalist students and political science students and law and economic science graduates from different universities and from different areas in Lebanon, because we want to all the areas and all the differences in Lebanon to be represented in our team. So we have people not just only from Beirut, the capital, but from the rural areas as well, because they have different problems that we face here. So yeah, this is mainly our team. And I'd like to say a big thank you to each and every one of them, because they are doing exceptional jobs and a small family, actually a big family.
Okay, I want to say thank you too, and I hope next time that we talk, there will be like 10 or 50 people that work for NACT Politics.
I hope so. It always depends on the funding, actually. I hope so.
So I wish you all the best, and thanks for your time, for giving us an insight in a real I call it now a so-called alternative news outlet.
Yes, thank you so much, Sabrina, for having me and having our platform as your guest. I hope to see you soon in Beirut or anywhere in the world. So let's hope we meet again.
Es passiert also viel in Beirut, der Hauptstadt im Libanon. Ein Wandel der Medien zeichnet sich ab. Es ist zwar noch der Anfang, aber ich sehe das schon kommen. Wer übrigens mehr zu der Thematik von traditionellen und sogenannten Alternative Media Outlets wissen möchte, dem empfehle ich die Folge 2 von diesem Podcast zum Thema konstruktiven Journalismus. Dort sind wir auf die Folgen von diesen Media Outlets eingegangen. Das war's dann auch schon von mir für den Moment. Die nächste Folge erscheint wie gewohnt in 14 Tagen. Mehr Infos zu Media for Peace findest du auf media-lab.de/de/media-for-peace. Ist ein bisschen kompliziert, deswegen habe ich es dir auch nochmal in die Shownotes gepackt. Ich wünsche dir was und ich hoffe doch, wir hören uns bald wieder.
Media for Peace, der Podcast für friedensorientierten Journalismus. Eine Produktion des Media Lab Bayern. Media for Peace ist eine Kooperation mit dem DTEC BW, Zentrum für Digitalisierungs- und Technologieforschung der Bundeswehr und der Universität der Bundeswehr München.